President Obama announced today that the United States is going to begin normalizing economic and diplomatic relations with Cuba. The Cuban embargo was enacted through executive order by President Kennedy, and now President Obama plans to undo it through similar action. And what does Congress have to say? Well, it's our weekly look at Congress right now with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. Paul joins us every week at this time. Paul, good to have you back.
Hey, Veronica. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Well, U.S.-Cuban relations have been regulated through both presidential executive action and bills passed by Congress for over half a century. How much can the president move to normalize U.S.-Cuba relations on his own?
Well, you know, he can do a lot with, again, expanding some of the categories of people who can travel, with expanding some of the business opportunities that can be opened there. You know, some of the economic relationship, he has some flexibility in. He can't raise the embargo by himself. He can start negotiations, but he can't appoint an ambassador by himself. That gets confirmed still by the Senate. He can't probably build an embassy by himself either. There's no money in the budget for that. I do think it is not coincidental that Obama announced this the day after the Senate completed its work on the continuing resolution and he signed it, because obviously the place where Congress would look to monkey in something like this is in a funding bill, where people would say, well, I'll remove the funding for whatever provisions of Cuba diplomacy that the administration is trying to pursue. So if nothing else, the Obama administration has bought themselves a year till September, when the government funding runs out again, before Congress really has a an immediate opportunity to engage in the funding question to try and block this this diplomatic action.
Well, this news just broke this morning when President Obama made his remarks. You mentioned areas like the embassy, the embargo, an ambassador. How is the move going over so far with Congress as to, you know, a litmus test as to what sort of appetite for these things there might be?
Well, you know, a bit of a mixed bag, as you would imagine. There are a lot of Cuba hardliners still in the U.S. Congress, many of them in the Republican Party, but not all of them, and some of them are Democrats as well. And it's interesting because it's not a partisan issue. I mean, some of the angry statements that came out today included, you know, Bob Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey of Cuban descent, who was you know, still believes that the United States should not be dealing with this government that is undemocratic at best. But then there's also, you know, on the airplane to go get Alan Gross was Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona. So, you know, it's a very mixed bag. It doesn't necessarily split down party lines. And I honestly think that the while the intensity of the anti-Cuban faction will be stronger, Marco Rubio from Florida was on television today saying he would basically lie on the tracks, do anything he could to stop this. I think that the general trend towards liberalization has been stronger in the Congress for the past decade or so. Would not surprise me to see, not necessarily that they want to vote on it, but they want to let it happen without getting involved.
Were there rumblings that this was coming down the pike, or was this a surprise to some people?
Surprised me. None of us had a plan. Early this morning, we got a heads up from one of our good sources to watch out for something Cuba-related. But that was the first we'd heard of it.
Well, moving on to the spending bill. Now, this past weekend, Congress came to an agreement on a $1.1 trillion spending bill. So let's talk about some of the vocabulary involved here, cromnibus and omnibus. Tell us what exactly those are. What does that mean?
Cromnibus, which we'll hopefully never say again. Congress has basically, over the past, you know, several years, once upon a time, used to pass appropriations bills for each agency. There's 12 of them, actually 13 really, that Congress passes governing the all of the spending for the federal government. But they haven't been able to actually do that, pass individual bills, for years. So what they usually do is they run over their deadline and they pass what's called a continuing resolution, lasts for a couple of months, they call it a CR, while they hash out what they call an omnibus bill, which basically just wraps all of those other bills into one giant piece of legislation and passes sometime before Christmas. Well, this year they did a little bit of both. This thing is a hybrid. It is both a CR and an omnibus. It's an omnibus because it covers everything. It's a CR because there is one chunk of it, the Homeland Security Department, that is only partially funded for, it's only funded till February. It has a continuing resolution till February, no full year bill, because Republicans would like, once they take control of the Senate, to get another look at the funding for the Homeland Security Department and figure out if there's another way for them to block the president's executive action on immigration. They couldn't figure out a way to do it this time. They would like another shot at it in February when they have a majority.
Now, the thing about a bill like this with lots of little things packed inside it, or lots of big things, you're kind of like a clown car bill, is that there are these things that are tucked away that are sort of being discovered as we go along and written about and talked about. And one of these is a change in campaign donation limits. Can you tell us about what's going on there as far as campaign finance?
Basically, earlier this year, Congress passed a bill that essentially eliminated federal financing for conventions, for the party conventions. And they moved that money to something like, you know, pediatric health research, because who could oppose that? So in this bill, they raised the amount of money that an individual can donate to the political parties for the purposes of funding their conventions, in theory. So you go from a guy or a woman for that matter, who used to be able to write a check for $100,000 that was the max they were allowed to spend in campaigns throughout the year. Now that number goes closer to $1 million that they're allowed to contribute throughout the year to all contributions. It is simply a way to basically raise a bunch more money. The concern is that it is also a way to reward big donors with new opportunities to help out the party leaders.
And to look at another aspect of this, this is a financial reform that's being rolled back, the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial reform package.
Yes, please don't get me into the details of Dodd-Frank. there's a reason why there was an economic crash, because none of us understood what derivatives are. I still don't. But what this provision does is roll back limits on government financing. The government insures banks. There were some of these derivatives that were considered too risky to insure. That's what Dodd-Frank did. It said, basically, you guys want to take your risks on these derivatives, knock yourself out, but the government's not going to back you on them. This provision puts the government backing back into that. So now, once again, they're gambling with taxpayers' money. The issue with both these provisions is they just sort of emerged in the bill at the last minute. Nobody had seen them. Nobody knew where they were coming from. Nobody knew why they were there. So they really sprung on everybody, including many members of the Congress.
Well, how do things like that wind up in a bill at the last minute without, you know, a lot of debate?
Because it's 3 o'clock in the morning. It's a 1,600-page bill. Nobody's paying attention. Everyone wants to go home for Christmas. You know, this is the last. We call these things Christmas trees because they are the last bill of the year, and everybody wants to hang their bauble on them, and someone slips it in. I mean, apparently there was one smart campaign finance lawyer who got the provision in for the convention funding. There were some banking attorneys and lobbyists who got the provision in on Dodd-Frank. The Republicans have been very suspicious of Dodd-Frank all along. They think it's an overreach of federal government regulation. You know, things fall in there. There was a bunch of marijuana legislation in there. Someone pulled the sage grouse out of the Endangered Species Act. You know, it's like your grandmother's attic. You know, there's all kinds of stuff in there, and you won't find out for months what all the details are.
Well, I want to touch on one more thing before we let you go. The United States has a new Surgeon General. We haven't had one for over a year, but the Senate, they confirmed Dr. Vivek Murthy on Monday. Now, he passed despite opposition from Republicans. What's been holding up his confirmation?
Well, you know, the funny thing about this is that the only reason they were able to pass some of these nominations is because some Republicans, particularly Senator Ted Cruz, objected to moving forward with the cromnibus. So there was just a bunch of dead time on the Senate schedule. So Harry Reid was like, okay, fine, we'll just pass a bunch of nominations. So the Republicans were actually really mad at Ted Cruz for opening the door for the passage of these nominations. Vivek Murthy, the issue is he's a young guy, doesn't have a great deal of experience, but the real issue is the NRA had opposed him because he has said in the past basically that guns are a public health issue. He also had been very actively campaigning for Obama in 2008. He had created an organization called Doctors for Obama. So Republicans just didn't like him for a bunch of reasons. And, you know, it was very – his nomination has been hanging out there for more than a year, and they haven't been able to act on it. It just happened to be an interesting window of opportunity, and the Democrats took it.
And real quickly, Paul, before we let you go, does the Surgeon General office, do you think, still have clout?
Have you heard of the last Surgeon General?
Not so much.
See? There's stuff they do, and they can be very interesting. And then in past years, in past eras, they have been very influential. But now when they get influential is when they get fired because they said something the president wasn't ready to say.
Well, Paul, thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Veronica. Bye-bye.
We've been speaking with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us every week to give us the lowdown on what Congress is and isn't doing. He'll join us on Friday next week to talk about the year in Washington and the legacy of the country's least productive Congress since 1973.